This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Patti Smith and Robert Mapplethorpe were both 20-year-old aspiring artists when they met in 1967. They soon moved in together and profoundly influenced each other's artistic development. Smith went on to become one of the most influential rock stars of her generation, and Mapplethorpe became one of the most controversial artists of his. His photographs of nudes, often in erotic and sadomasochistic poses, put him right in the center of the battle over censorship and federal funding of the arts. Mapplethorpe died of AIDS in 1989 at the age of 42. Recently, Random House published a book of his work called Altars. Patti Smith has a book of short prose poems dedicated to and inspired by Mapplethorpe called The Coral Sea. It will be published at the end of May by Norton. Although Smith is reluctant to talk much about herself and her music, she was happy to talk with us about Mapplethorpe, his work, and their long friendship. She thinks many people know Mapplethorpe only through the controversy and misinterpret his work.
Robert considered himself an artist, and he was in no way a homosexual artist or a... he didn't have boundaries like that. I think it's... incorrect to label him that way. In his body of work, he regarded a body part, a flower, a rooster, a statue with the same aesthetic principles.
He took a bunch of photographs of you. What was it like to be photographed by Robert Mapplethorpe?
Well, I was his first model, so when we were younger, he followed me around continuously with a cheap Polaroid camera, and I got to a point where I'd start hiding because I didn't want to be photographed anymore. But I always actually enjoyed being photographed by Robert. It was always quick, simple, very little direction, very natural. Until the end of his life, we always did our work together very quickly in natural light. And being photographed by Robert, not just from myself, but other models have said the same thing. There exists between him and his model trust. And I always felt working with Robert, the trust of our friendship. We trusted each other as people. We cared about each other as people, and so when we worked together, we extended that same care into our work. I wanted his work to be good. He wanted to present me in the best light, so that's what I mostly think about, is that element of trust.
He took the photograph, perhaps the most famous photograph of you that was on your the cover of your album, Horses, I think in 1975. In which you're wearing a kind of oversized white shirt and an undone tie with a suit jacket slung over your shoulder. Tell us how that photograph came about.
Well, we wanted to take the cover, and Robert knew where he wanted to take it. It was up in Sam Wagstaff's apartment in New York City, which was a very white room, and there was a triangle of light that used to come through a window, and he was extremely interested in photographing that triangle. And we went up there, and I remember the light started changing, and he wanted us to hurry up, and we had to run. We couldn't get a cab, and we had to run as fast as we could because he could really feel the light changing. And in terms of my clothing, it was just my usual clothes. I used to like, I really wanted to have a Baudelairean type of look. I wanted a black and white sort of a mixture of just how I was and a little 19th century feel in it. But in the end, the final photograph, which some people have made quite a bit of, the particular pose or stance in the photograph was really a tribute to Frank Sinatra.
The Capitol years.
Well, no, actually, he did a movie. I think it was called. I don't think it was Pal Joey. It was the Joey Lewis story, And Joey Lewis was a singer that got in trouble with the mob, and he got his throat cut, and he wound up a comedian. I don't know if you remember that, but
yeah, it's the movie that All the Way comes from.
Yeah, that's right. The last scene of it, Frank Sinatra's walking alone down a dark street with a lantern. There's a lantern lit street, and he sort of philosophically talking to himself in a pane of glass, and he slings his coat over his shoulder and, you know, philosophically walks into the city sunset. But I always thought it was cool the way he slung his coat over his shoulder. So that was the only, there was only a couple of photographs in that particular shooting like that, but that was the one Robert picked, the Frank Sinatra shot.
The Joker is Wild, I think.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, that's it. The Joker is Wild. Appropriate title.
You met Robert Mapplethorpe in 1967 when you were 20. Do I have that right?
Yes.
How did you meet?
Well, we met in Brooklyn. I was around Pratt Institute of Art, where he went to school. I had a friend there, and my friend had moved, and I was looking for my friend, and I knocked on the door where he used to be, and someone said, well, I don't know where your friend is, but you can ask the guy in there. And I went in another room and saw this kid sleeping on this cot, and I just stood there and was watching him sleep, and he opened his eyes and smiled at me, and that's how we met.
Now, was he already taking photographs when you met?
No, he didn't start taking photographs till late 69, when we were at the Chelsea Hotel. He really only started taking photographs. He was doing drawings, paintings, and collages, and some constructions. And then later he did installations. But in his huge montages and collages, he used a lot of magazine pictures, holy cards, existing pictures, reproductions of Michelangelo, who he greatly admired, reproductions of statues and sculpture, and but he was never satisfied, and he really started taking photographs to insert within his other work. He didn't set out to become a photographer. He really just wanted to create his own information for his drawings and montages.
Did you help each other with your work?
Always.
What ways were you able to help him, and how did he help you?
Well, we helped each other in any way we could, if whether it be financially or an encouraging word or constructive criticism, and just mutual belief in each other's work. When you, that's something really that no one can duplicate nor take away from you, is when you have another human being that completely believes in your work.
Was he the first person who completely believed in your work?
I'd say so, yes.
You've said that Mapplethorpe helped you make the transition from psychotic to serious art student. What did you mean by that?
Well, I'm never quite sure of what I meant. You know, when people ask me to explain what I said 20 years ago or something, it's I couldn't exactly say what I meant. But I probably, when I met him, I felt like my work was really an extension of my neuroses, and instead of an extension of intelligence, and he, by helping me believe in myself as a person and gaining respect for my own intelligence, shifted the emphasis where the work came from. I really did start writing and drawing when I was younger to relieve myself from certain emotional tensions. But
like what?
Well, I mean, whatever tensions people have when they're growing up, whether it be fear or sexual tensions or parental tension, youthful paranoia. I don't know. Name it.
No, I think he gave you the money to record your first record, the 45 that had Hey Joe on one side and Piss Factory on the other. Tell me the story of that.
Well, it's really simply Robert, you know, for a long time I had helped him financially, and Robert's situation got more solid. He had a really benevolent and wonderful patron, Sam Wagstaff. And through Sam Wagstaff, Robert was able to finance our first our only independent single. And that's all the story was. I wanted to do a single and didn't have the money, and he gave it to me. So we went into Electric Ladyland one night and did it in one night.
We may look the same, shoulder to shoulder, sweating 110 degrees, but I will never faint. I will never faint. They laugh and they expect me to faint, but I will never faint. I refuse to lose, I refuse to fall down, because you see, it's the monotony that's got to me. Every afternoon like the last one, every afternoon like a rerun, next to Dot Hook. And yeah, we look the same, both pumping steel, both sweating, but you know, she got nothing to hide, and I got something to hide here.
Robert always, when we were younger, he always thought that I should sing, although it was never really an ambition of mine. And he was really happy when I wanted to do the single, and he was really pleased to be a part of it.
Had he heard you sing? I mean, would you sing? Were you singing in the house before you were singing in performance?
Yeah, you know, I'd, you know, be making spaghetti or washing clothes and sing. I don't... used to sing little songs, and for some reason he liked my singing. He used to think I used to sing little blues songs and things, and he used to think he always thought I should sing.
You think you would have done it if he didn't nudge you in that direction?
Well, he did push me towards that, but it was a series of people, actually. You know, Sam Shepard was really instrumental in getting me to sing in public. I had a few different friends that seemed to think that I was I had a bend toward that, and I really do believe if it wasn't for those friends, or Lenny Kay and a few others, no, I don't believe that I would be singing, at least not recording. I mean, I might still be singing around the house making spaghetti, but I can't say that I would have been recording.
My guest is Patti Smith. Next month, her book of prose poems, inspired by Robert Mapplethorpe, will be published. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Patti Smith, and we're talking about her long friendship with the late photographer Robert Mapplethorpe. There's a new book of his work called Altars. You and Mapplethorpe were both unknown when you met. In other words, you didn't have reputations, and
we were 20 years old.
Exactly, right.
And neither one
young.
Of us were Arthur Rimbaud. That's
yeah, you know.
Actually, Arthur Rimbaud was unknown when he was 20 as well. So I guess it's.
Well, did you each have a sense of what you hoped to become? I mean, he seemed to have, from what you're saying, a real sense of what he wanted to be. He knew he wanted to be an artist.
We really, both of us had a lot of bravado and did imagine that we were going to make our mark in the world. I mean, considering both of us at 20, we were both fairly awkward misfits who often were the brunt of people's jokes. I'd say we did have a lot of bravado. We believed in ourselves. We believed in each other. We believed in our work, and we really felt that someday we would do something worthwhile.
I think you said it was in 1969 that Mapplethorpe actually started taking pictures and moved away from the collages he was doing to do photography instead. What was the subject matter of the early photographs he did? What type of subject matter?
Pretty much the same as he always did. He photographed statues, sculpture. He photographed me quite a bit. He started branching out and photographed a lot of self-portraits. Most of his early photographs were self-portraits and photographs of myself. And then he branched out and photographed a lot of young men, usually in place of, I would say, sculpture. You know, he really admired sculpture. He had thought of being a sculptor when he was younger, and he really admired Michelangelo, and he liked the human form, and he began to photograph various parts of the body of mostly males. And later he branched out into females.
When did the sadomasochistic subject matter start entering his work?
He photographed that particular body of work, I think, in the early 70s. And it's a very difficult body of work. It's not for everybody. It's highly sophisticated. And it was difficult for him to shoot. But he really felt that strangely privileged in a way to be able to shoot these practices, and he shot them respectfully, and was trying. The things he was attempting at that time were very much like the things Janae was attempting, was to take material. Or to take certain sexual practices or ways of life that were deemed socially unacceptable or pornographic, and to present them in a respectful, if not beautiful, manner, to project them as elegantly as possible. I mean, certainly no one has described, male copulation or the things that men do with men is more beautifully than Janae. And Robert was attempting to do the same type of thing with his work. He wanted to, since people do these things, he tried to photograph them with dignity and grace. So that he wasn't photographing them as social commentary, or as if Diane Arbus would, to show the sad, twisted aspect of mankind. He really photographed them to show a certain amount of beauty and trust in that moment. Because certainly, as much as I can glean about it, sadomasochistic practices definitely depend on trust, and I think that he felt that was very interesting to him, to watch something so difficult that depended on trust, and they also simultaneously had to trust him, that he wasn't going to exploit or interfere with their practices.
As you said, this art isn't for everybody.
No, it's not.
Did you relate to it? Do you relate to it?
No, but I felt some of the work is really too difficult for me to even look at, but I always admired Robert's integrity and high-mindedness in doing that kind of work.
You have two children, so they haven't seen difficult photos, I take it.
No, they can look at them later, but if they wish. But Robert knew I felt like that, and he often, I mean, he had a sense of humor, and also he was very, very compassionate about those things. He knew that this work was not for everyone, and certainly when Robert had shows and he felt, if he felt that some of the work was too hard on certain people, he would have been the first to take that work down and put another piece up, because to him it was all the same. And but what he used to do to me is he'd often take his most difficult pictures and he'd put one under my pillow, or or I had a big book of Peter Pan stories that I used to love, you know, beautiful book of Peter Pan with these beautiful paintings in it, and I used to like to look at it, and sometimes I wouldn't look at it for a few months, and then I'd one night pick it up and there would be one of those pictures, you know, put in, and you know, he'd hear me go, "Robert," and he'd start laughing because he knew that I had finally found the picture. But it was just fun between us. Robert was really funny. He had a great sense of humor, and he loved to tease like that.
Patti Smith's book of prose poems, inspired by Robert Mapplethorpe, will be published next month. It's called The Coral Sea. Smith will be back with us to talk more about Mapplethorpe in the second part of our show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with poet, singer, and songwriter Patti Smith. She has a new book of prose poems, inspired by and dedicated to the late photographer Robert Mapplethorpe, her longtime friend. Her book, The Coral Sea, will be published next month. How did Robert Mapplethorpe react to the controversy around his work and to attempts to censor it?
He never really understood. He did know that certain of the sadomasochistic pictures were difficult. He knew they weren't, those particular pictures weren't for everybody, and he usually, whenever he showed them specially. He showed them in glass cases. He showed them in rooms that had a warning sticker, and he believed that's the way it should be. He never really, he felt that intelligent adults and people in the art world who were sophisticated should have been able to comprehend and appreciate his work. But he always realized that a certain aspect of his work was not for everyone, but that was only a certain aspect of his work. He did photographed quite I think more flowers and more human beings, more sculpture, more children than he did controversial photos. The controversial photos are really a small percentage of his work. And he died before the really big controversy happened. I think it would have really been painful for him, especially when he was called a child pornographer.
Was it painful for you? You had just lost somebody really close to you, and then he was, you know, the subject of all this controversy in the press.
It was painful for me to see that, because I knew that would have just been terrible for him. He was great with children. He loved children. He was not in the remotest way interested in children physically. And all of his pictures were done lovingly, humorously, or aesthetically, without any, not the slightest evil thought. And I have a feeling he would have been very happy to remove the photographs that people found so terrible and replace them with other photographs of equal merit. Because his belief in his work did not... was not in the subject matter of his work. It was the intuition and the intelligence that he had that gave him the ability to beautifully frame an object, to his sense of composition, his sense of lighting. Robert, for instance, could produce blacks in his the color black in his photographs, a deeper black than anyone I've ever seen. He became in his lifetime really a master at lighting, and he really believed that photography was basically a romance with lighting.
Robert Mapplethorpe took the photograph for an album that you made in 1988 after a long hiatus from recording. Would you describe that album cover for us and your feelings about the photograph? It's a very different image than the one he did for your 1975 album.
The Dream of Life album cover. Well, at the time, I was about 6 or 7 months pregnant, and I really wanted. Robert was working. Robert was had been ill, and he was doing most of his work in the studio. But I really wanted, and we did some studio work. But I really wanted to do something like we did when we were younger, in natural light. And he wasn't as keen on it as I was, but we found a little spot. We were in California, actually, and what's behind me, I think, was a huge dying palm tree. And I just sat in front of it, and, I just had my old sweater on, and my hair was braided, and the sun, the sun was quite bright, and Robert wasn't feeling well that day, but he took the pictures anyway, and I remember his hand was shaking so much that he dropped his light meter, and he had to do the shooting without the light meter, and so when he got the negatives back, he was disappointed in them because they were thin, he said. So we were going to use a studio picture, and he didn't even show me those pictures. And he knew I wanted another one, but I was going to go with the one he chose. And then he called me up and he said, "All right, I'm going to send you the picture that you want." And because I just couldn't bear arguing with him about the picture. I let him choose the studio picture. And I was really surprised, and the next day the photograph arrived, and it was exactly what I wanted. Not perhaps the most flattering picture or anything, but it was just like myself at the time. And in it, when I looked at it, I could see my whole life in that photograph, and all the trust that was between Robert and I really felt was in that picture. And it was really his last true gift to me, was to give me that photograph, because he felt, he really did it for me. He really didn't feel it was his best work, and he was very unhappy with the lighting and things like that. But he knew enough about me that he knew that would be the picture that I'd like. And that's how we got the cover of Dream of Life, which nobody really liked. I mean, the record company didn't like it, and a lot of people didn't like it, but I liked it. And he gave it to me, that was the cover.
You've been doing some writing inspired by Robert Mapplethorpe, and you have a forthcoming book called The Coral Sea. Maybe you could read us a piece from there and tell us a little bit about the evolution of this writing.
Well, The Coral Sea is it's a series of small prose poems that are linked together that I wrote in 1989, when Robert passed away. I really wrote it in lieu of tears, because knowing Robert the way that I do, he would have more appreciated to have a body of work in his name than a bucket of tears. So I wrote The Coral Sea for him. And this is just one of the pieces, and it's called A Bed of Roses. He had come to the conclusion that each of us knows everything. For destiny is our familiar, she permeates our breath. Hers is the atmosphere whereupon a babe pillows his head. Signs wave their arms as we pass over. Lovers avert their eyes until the quivering recognition becomes unbearable, and they part, each holding a piece of future fitting together like a dime store heart. He was destined to be ill, and part of him knew it, but he did not wish to address it, not now. So he fled into the bowels of tedium, disguised as adventure, a liner in the center of the sea, into a mind untapped, pure and roomy. Here time stretched like a superhero of elastic play, a superhero of elastic clay. Here destiny could be corded and swept off her feet. Such a prospect filled him with a tremendous resolve, and he grasped the signs, molding and remolding them. He leaned against the rail, euphoric, drumming scores of tiny thorns into the sea, and there he surrendered, a youth stretched spread-eagle upon a bed of roses, a burning held like a claw within his swelling belly, which he slit with his own hand, too numb to feel, too ecstatic to speak.
Patti Smith. Her book of prose poems, The Coral Sea, will be published next month. There's a recent book of Mapplethorpe's work called Altars. Here's music from Patti Smith's latest album, Dream of Life. This is Fresh Air.